Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ask the Industry podcast, episode 49. For those of you new to the show, my name's Simon Kane, and this is the podcast where I interview the most influential people from the world of stand-up, comedy, radio, TV, and today, the festival circuit. The European Comedy Festival Network is a network at the moment of four festivals spread all over Europe who share information, shows and talent to help each of their festivals have the best possible lineups. We talk to each festival about what they have on offer, what they're looking for, what they're not looking for, and a lot more in between. I'm not going to go into much detail of who the guests are because I get them to announce who they are in the pod, which I think makes it a lot easier to try and identify which person's answering which question. I'd just like to quickly say thank you very much to Jeff Rowe, who is the Leicester Comedy Festival founder, who helped massively in getting this podcast sorted. Also for all the staff at Peter's Pizzeria in Leicester for hosting us. Thank you so much for all your support and help. Before I hit play on this, I should let you know I have a blog post that I did about my time at the Leicester Comedy Festival, which is linked in the show notes and on the website, which you can also find under my indie guides. Oh no, which you can also find under my fringe guides even. And it tells you how much stuff costs for me to take part, and my profit and loss, and people that came in, and how I advertised, and all that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in that, check that out on my website. There's also a linked video which goes into detail about what I did, how I did it, how I saved money, how I advertised my show, things I learned, all that kind of stuff. So if you're looking at taking part in the festival, that's there. I'd also recommend highly the Free Fringe Network up there and all the people that are taking part in that, because they are excellent and they're very responsive and get back to you very quickly in answering questions, as do Jeff and his team. Particularly Sam was amazingly helpful in getting stuff sorted. So if you have any questions, I'd say be more than upfront and approach them. They're lovely, lovely people and they really, really want their festival to continue and to be great. And it is. So do ask them anything you want to ask. Without any more delays, this is our second live Q&A. Hello, you're right. Just quick interest. How many of you listen to the podcasts generally, like non-like this?
Yeah.
Two, three, four. Okay, cool. So you all know why you're here, right? Just checking, because last time some people did come thinking it was a gig, so it's better than that. Okay, so basically this is a panel of festival founders and people that run festivals, and you can ask them anything you want, and I have submitted questions from the podcast people who wanted to be here but can't be here. So if you guys maybe want to go from left to right and explain who you are, then that way the mics will pick up your voice, and then people who listen at home can try and work out who you are from your voice.
Is that from their left or our left?
You can start.
Okay. my name's Sam Avery. I'm the artistic director of the Liverpool Comedy Festival, and I'm also a stand-up comedian on the UK circuit myself as well.
I'm Jeff Rowe. I'm the founder and director of Dave's Leicester Comedy Festival.
I'm Maria Jeppesen. I'm from Denmark, and I'm co-producer of the Danish comedy festival called Zulu Comedy Festival.
And I'm Chi Tan. I'm the founder and the festival manager for International Comedy Box Festival in Norway.
Do you just want to say who Zulu are?
Yes, so Zulu is a TV station not similar, but it's kind of equivalent to the Dave sponsorship of Leicester Comedy Festival. So that's why it's called Zulu Comedy Festival. So it's a Danish broadcasting company.
Awesome. Before we go any further, how many of you have come with questions that you need to be answered?
This will be a really short podcast.
I have submitted questions, but I just wanted to see how many people have come with stuff. So maybe if we start off with Marie and Chi. I've been asked about Free Fringe in your festival, and obviously Dave's Leicester, that's a thing, and I believe at Liverpool there's a version of Free.
We're looking into it, yeah.
Yeah. So for people who maybe want to go abroad and do their show as a part of a Free Fringe, is that a possibility? And if not, is it something that just isn't as viable over there that it is over here?
We don't have an equivalent to the Free Fringe at our festival or in Denmark in comedy festivals. So what we have done internationally with international comedians wanting to come to Denmark is we have done an exchange program with Dave Lister Comedy Festival, who is then responsible of bringing comedians and vice versa. So we have brought comedians to Leicester each year. Then there's also some independent promoters in Denmark, bookers that bring international comedians, but that's basically what the opportunities are at this moment.
So that works as in say you did Dave's festival. Does that mean you have to like sign up for a certain scheme that means you do a trade off, or is it you're scouting for people that you'd want to trade with?
We're scouting for people that we want to trade with, and that's partly also why we are here at this festival, to bring Danish comedians, of course, and then also scout and then give Dave Lister Comedy Festival and Jeff recommendation in terms of what we think would work for a Danish audience.
Okay.
Yeah, so a lot very similar to the Danish scene. The thing with the Norwegian scene is that it's still very fresh. It's very new. So stand-up comedy, I think, only just started in the 90s. So where it is at this moment, it's kind of like a lot of the UK comics say that the excitement around stand-up comedy in Norway at this currently is like how it was in the 80s in the UK. So bringing in a free gig, I don't know if it's realistic to do it yet, because the audience not trained to for stand-up. They're not there yet. So because Norway has a very strong tradition with sketch comedy, like a similar thing to sketch comedy, where it's like with wigs and two teeth and costumes and stuff. So people are not really used to that stand-up as an art form. So when a stand-up comedian is talking, asking a question, people will respond. So it's doing a free gig will basically, they don't know. They might not know what they're going to, and they might not respond to. They're not, well, they're trained, but it's still like it's very different from different gigs, and it's not that broad and common yet. But it's getting there. It's developed quite a lot over the few like 5 to 10 years. But I'm not sure if we're quite ready.
That makes sense. No, that doesn't make sense. Are there certain types of comedy that doesn't go down as well then there? Because if they're not as comedy literate as maybe we are over here, are there certain acts that or types of comedy you're not looking for because they maybe aren't ready for that?
Well, for our festival in particular, it's we're a very alternative comedy festival. It's not the... we're very alternative. So what we try to do is bring in alternatives to showcase what kind of different genre within the comedy scene. So you have stand-up and you have the absurd, you have the, different styles and stuff. So I think if you make people aware, the audience aware of what they're buying a ticket to go to see, then they will also be open for it. But they're very curious. There's a very big excitement around stand-up, so it's developing, and it's a very exciting time for us that works with festivals. So Yeah, you can't, like, we had the comics like Will Franken and Tony Law, and it's like people love them or they don't get it. So, but if they are not warned before they go and see the show, they probably most likely won't get it. So we still need to tell people what what they're buying a ticket to go and see.
As in you're much more direct about what kind of comedy it is?
Yes.
Okay. And how is that working out? Like, is it narrowing down audiences for certain performers and making it easier to sell tickets, or is it making it sort of like people might not go as much because they're sort of not interested in certain types of humor?
Well, it depends if it's a stand-up gig or if it's a festival. But I can only speak for the Comedy Box. But our mentality is that we want people to be open. We don't. So we tell them, you might get this, you might get that, but be open. So when they go and buy a ticket to see a club gig that has six different comics or four different comics, they buy the ticket because they're curious. Mm. So I find that we're actually getting through to a lot more people, actually, because we make them curious about, don't buy for the sake of the name, just buy for the quality of what we're getting over here.
Okay. Yeah. And how is your relationship with Dave Lester? Is that the same thing
that
you're looking for?
Yeah.
Certain acts. Mm-hmm. And in terms of scouting, does that mean you guys, you're obviously here looking at shows?
Yeah.
Do you have certain other people that you're sending out to do that? What's the process for you guys for scouting? I assume that's the same with Liverpool. Are you exchanging details of shows?
Yes, in a way with certain festivals, but I think it's, I mean, there's various issues that, from our point of view, from the Liverpool Comedy Festival point of view, we've got various challenges that I think other festivals perhaps don't have, and we're just trying to navigate through them. I mean, I don't know if you're aware, as a city, Liverpool's considered by a lot of comedians to be one of the hardest places to play. So to actually entice them to come to Liverpool and do an hour, you know, when 20 minutes can feel like a long time in Liverpool, can be a challenge. But I think we're getting around that by just, you know, giving people a nice experience really through that. It's interesting talking about the free fringe model, because I've seen from an axe point of view I want to go to Norway. It sounds amazing, just so exciting, with me wigs and me teeth, and just take them. It just sounds like a really, you know, exciting time to be a comedian over there. But having seen the free fringe model kind of change in Edinburgh, I think it's been a really positive thing. And there's been obviously the political problems that happened last year, which we won't get into, but I think the model in Liverpool is that it's, we have to be very different to Edinburgh, and we have to be very different to certain other festivals in the UK, just because the audience there has a certain dislikes and likes, and they're quite honest about that. And I think as a festival we have to respond to that and make sure we're offering something that's going to work. And one of the big things that people always say to me is, let's do a late night show. You know, every Saturday we'll do a late night show. And I'm like, yeah, but it'll be chaos. It won't be like a beautiful late night random show in the Fringe in Edinburgh. It'll be just violence and just like horrible stories and court cases and stuff. And I'm not saying that to talk down my city. I just know that when stuff goes on very late at night, without the right audience, and that's what we're trying to do, we're trying to build the audience where we can do stuff that's a bit more imaginative and a bit more festival, if you want to call it that.
I've never gigged in Liverpool. Why is it a hard place to gig?
I don't think it is, because of this accent. So they go, oh, he's all right, he's one of ours, put the gun away. But I think a lot of comedians go to Liverpool with certain baggage that then means they react differently on stage and perhaps go at it very, very confrontationally. And all you need to do really is say, I love it here, and everyone goes, okay. That's it. Sometimes you just have to kind of make the audience believe that you're happy to be in the city. I know it sounds like such kidology, but that's sometimes all that you need to do, really.
Yeah, it's a good secret tip.
Yeah.
And in terms of building your audiences for each of your individual festivals, what are you doing in terms of trying to expand the number of people that are coming in, but also the number of shows that you're able to... Because obviously, if we look at Edinburgh, I mean, it's a whole different model. It's got to a stage where just every room has become a venue. And I assume none of you want to get to a stage where you're just trying to fit in as many shows as possible. So what is your curation process, and also what is your process for trying to attract new people to come and watch comedy in your specific festival? Anyone can answer that in any order.
Well, we don't. Ours is... Leicester is pretty organic, really, in the sense that our model... It's important to recognise, I think, that probably all our models are very different in terms of how the festivals work. And the biggest piece of advice, I think, to any comedian is to find out what the model is. So our model is very much that we rely a lot on our promoters. So it's a bit like Edinburgh in the sense that we most of the shows, I don't know, 90% of the shows are promoted not by us, they're promoted by other people. So it's so going back to the free fringe idea, that came about because some promoters who promote here wanted to do a free fringe model. And there was no, you know, plan to make that happen. It just organically grew, I suppose, because people wanted to do that, and that's fine, really, as far as I'm concerned. And likewise, the size of the festival. Some people are quite surprised that we only know how many venues and how many shows there are on submission day. So, did I have a plan to increase the festival by 140 shows from last year to this year? No, that was never the... I didn't know how many shows were going to be submitted until they are submitted. So the challenge then, if you like, is trying to make the festival brand as enticing as possible to audiences to come. Because if some promoters put on shows and they put on lots of shows and nobody comes, they'll be mightily fed up, probably with us, I imagine, for not doing that. So we do about a third of our audience last... I don't know how many people are going to come this year because we're mid-festival. So about 30% of our audience in 2015 came from outside of Leicestershire, which is about 30,000 people. So we try and encourage as many people as possible to come from the city, obviously, but also from outside. And how do we do that? Well, broadly, we increase the marketing and PR and media that we do outside of Leicester. I mean, I know that sounds really easy, really obvious, but clearly, the relationship with Dave has helped a lot with that, and frankly has given us more money to do more national PR, which we put a lot of money into. We also, of course, do quite a lot of social media stuff to try and get people to think... As they think in August, well, I'll go to Edinburgh. The idea is that they increasingly, if you're a fan of comedy, you'll think, well, I'll go to Leicester for the weekend in February to experience the festival. So, I mean, I know that's a very generic. I can give you more detail if you want it, but that's broadly what we do. And of course, the more we do that, the more promoters want to promote more gigs, the more hotels like us, the more restaurants like us, the more the city likes us, and that's all an important part of building a festival, I think, is having that broader impact. It's not just about how many tickets you sell and how many shows you have. It's that atmosphere, which is really, really hard to get. I think probably we all agree it's really difficult to do that. We continuously work hard to make sure. The idea is that if you come to Leicester during the festival, you know that there's something going on. Because it's predominantly an indoor festival, it's, you know, it's not Glastonbury, where if you drive past Glastonbury, I assume you know Glastonbury's happening because you can see it. We're not like that. It's an indoor festival, and certainly that was a frustration in the early years, that people, there wasn't that atmosphere, there wasn't that vibrancy about the city. There was just maybe four or five gigs happening inside venues, 50, 60, 70, whatever, people will go and see those shows, they'll have a great time. But if you walk around the city, you wouldn't have a clue that there was a festival going on. I think that's changed in Leicester now. I mean, I'm not the person... I know there's a festival happening, but I would. I think people tell me it feels different in the city when the festival's on, which is great. But it's difficult to explain how you do that. Certainly in terms of these guys, I don't know... I only know Leicester, you know. I don't know the other cities well at all, so I've no idea how you create that atmosphere in Liverpool or Stavanger or Copenhagen. I mean, you just have to kind of figure it out yourselves, really.
I think just sorry to jump in, I think from a Liverpool point of view, there is that possibility to create that atmosphere, but I think from where we are is a lot further away from where Leicester is in terms of getting that momentum and getting that kind of feel in the city. And I think there's so much comedy in Liverpool throughout the year as well, so it feels a bit more difficult to kind of... That's another challenge we have, really, to bring everyone on side and make sure everyone pushes towards the festival, because people are programming events throughout the year. And Liverpool's also trying to become the first UK festival city, because there's so many. There's like, there was a trainer festival on the other day, you know, for trainers that you wear on your feet. There's a goth festival, a comic book festival. These are all great festivals, but they kind of get in the way a little bit. So other than detaching snipers to take out all these festivals, we have to kind of work with them and kind of, you know, sort of build that together. But it's interesting to hear your points there.
Yeah. And you religiously don't wear trainers now, do you?
I don't wear any trainers, and I've stopped being a goth.
Yeah.
I think with the Sulu Comedy Festival, based mainly in Copenhagen, then also another larger, second largest city in Denmark, the challenges that we face is that it's there's a lot of competition, because it's the main capital, and all cultural events and happenings is placed there. So there's a lot of competition. So, and we can't. We're not the size where we can just decorate the whole Copenhagen city in Sulu Comedy Festival merchandise and so on. The only event that could do that was when we had the Eurovision. So you kind of need a type of an event or festival that can do that. So, and also we face with, you mentioned the Glastonbury, we often talk about, okay, so what does the word or the term festival cover, really? Like, what is the perception in people's minds about a festival? Because it's not where you go on a field in a tent and live and drink for a week constantly. It's different with the comedy. So how can we also, as you mentioned, in Liverpool, we have comedy shows and throughout the year in Copenhagen a lot. So how can we tell people that this is the shows that they are buying a ticket for is actually part of a festival and not just a listed show like the rest of the year? And from that build, and then also make them buy tickets for different other shows, because as you, with your questions about how, with the audience development and so on, is Sulu Comedy Festival is very interested in working with Danish people, audience perception of comedy, because a lot of people just narrow it down to stand-up. But we are a festival that kind of wants to show that comedy is, it can also be theatre performances, it can also be music performances. It's everything. Our definition is everything that makes you laugh can be in our program, and therefore in the Danish culture, a lot of Danish people, they actually can say, there's a lot of people say, oh, I tried stand-up once, it wasn't me. So they don't go to stand-up performances. And then you would never hear a person say, oh, I tried music once, it wasn't really for me. And then never go to listen to music. So that's what we're kind of working on, in the sense that, okay, so at least if you go to this comedy theater performance or whatnot, there's actually a festival. You're part of a festival, and we have all these other experimental or concept shows. And would you be interested? And kind of give people that sense of being at a festival. And I can just go around and not pay like a lot of money for each show, but it's more like cheaper shows that you could actually just have a whole night of different shows and go and see that there's a wide variety of performances in the term of comedy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really important. I spoke a bit about the branding and the marketing and all that sort of thing, but also the programme is really important. So 90% of Dave Lester Comedy Festival is programmed by other people and produced by other people, but 10% probably, these are not accurate figures, are produced by us. And so to go back to your previous question about how do people access the festivals and what's the best way to approach us and things, we always like it when people approach us with kind of original, innovative ideas, like Maria was saying, really, that make the programme not just what you might experience throughout the rest of the year. I mean, like Liverpool, Leicester has an increasing comedy scene throughout the year, which we sort of support in a small way, the thing called the Leicester Fridge, which is growing every year in terms of local comedians doing lots of stand-up shows, but also one-off events and one-off performances, which make it different. Last night with Chi, we did a thing called Comedy Box Takeover, which was in a small shopping centre, I suppose. What do you call St. Martin's Square? Shopping centre, is that it? Yeah. Anyway, an area with shops in it. They did shows in shops and cafes and basements and stuff like that. So to try and make the the programme different, and I know this is, again, it's an obvious thing to say, but festive, so that you can't see Johnny Vegas being interviewed on stage in Leicester the rest of the year. He's only doing that because it's the festival. Nicholas Parsons, same sort of thing, really. One-offs are really important. But I think that's easier for me to talk about now, because we've got an audience that responds positively to those things. If you'd asked me that question 15 years ago, or 20 years ago, I'd say, well, we're trying out these innovative, different types of things, and no one's coming. And that's problematic. And I don't know how you balance that between... It just happens organically with us. People have come over the years, but in the early days, they didn't come to anything that wasn't on telly.
We had a massive breakthrough last year when we managed to get the Odeon in the centre of Liverpool to play with Neil and I. And Paul McGann from Liverpool came and did a Q&A after the film. Now, that's such a cult classic. The place was shocker. And he turned up with the guy who plays Danny as well. And with Neil and I can't remember the actor's name. He just turned up with him. He must have had knocking on or something. He just turned up. So the two of them sat there and did this Q&A. And the fact that we got a lot of press from that, and the fact that it was so busy and popular, and people were just, you know, enamoured by the whole thing, was a massive breakthrough from what you say about just those curated events, those individually curated events that just push the festival, and then the rest of the programme can be elevated by those in a really nice way. So that was really interesting.
Does that mean that you guys are looking for finished shows rather than work in progress or selection shows?
So about the format of solo shows and the way they work here in the UK festivals is very different from the Norwegian scene. So we face totally different challenges. For us to bring in a solo show from an unknown comedian, that it can be a huge comedian in UK, but Norway is completely different, so it would be hard for us to. We're at a different place. All of Norway, I would say, but specifically for my festival, it's even more alternative and more different, and we face different challenges because we do completely different things than other festivals. So, Stavanger is an oil city. It's kind of like the equivalent to Aberdeen. So there's a lot of expats, the whole city is run on oil, basically. Everybody lives by oil. So there are a lot of expats there. So our focus is, for example, to reach out to include the expats, to include the English people, speaking people, as well as the Norwegian ones. And we don't only run a festival once a year, we run club gigs throughout the whole year, because we see the value of showcasing what stand-up and bringing it into the city and making it a thing that people go and see regularly. Because if you don't have that, you can't really support a comedy festival. So we need the club gigs, the regular club gigs, to be able to sell festival passes or festival tickets, if that makes sense. So, and like I said, our festival is completely different. We don't really bring in solo shows. Very short is we have bite-sized comedy shows where we... the value of the Comedy Box Festival is that we want to showcase that comedy is also an art form, because in Norway it's very conservative. They don't consider stand-up or comedy in general as an art form. They don't see comedians as performing artists. They're just the stepchildren, basically, of the performing artists. So we're still a little bit conservative, but it's getting developing really, really fast now. So a part of the idea of the Comedy Box Festival is to showcase as many people and the different types of the genre. Like Maria said, it's not comedy, it's not only stand-up, it's also musical. It can be music, it can be theater, it can be a movie theater, it can be comics, it can be anything that makes people laugh. So for our festival, we normally use a building. It's an old brewery. It has like so many different rooms there, so each room has its own theme. So we encourage people to see things they never seen before, and they just buy one ticket. And their shows running, they're only 10-minute spots throughout the whole festival, and they can choose the rooms they want to see. You have a room, it's English comedy. or English stand-up. You have a room called Norwegian stand-up. You have a room called Music and Comedy. You have a room called Comedy Lounge, which is like the smoky, jazzy sort of poetry feel to it. You have like elevated comedy, where we basically place a stage inside an elevator and people do like observed comedy. And we have a toilet comedy, which is all crap comedy. So we place people and comics inside a toilet. So they kind of know what they're...
They're in the cubicle. They're not actually in the toilet.
Yes, they are. They stand on the toilet bowl.
Oh. I've done worse gigs than that.
So our challenge to bring comedy to our festival is basically, there are 80 comedians here. You've probably never heard of any of them, but the ticket is quite affordable. So why don't you come and see? And if you don't like any of the 80 people you've seen, you don't have a sense of humor. it's the gist of it. It's a floating thing. Everybody just go in and do their 10-minute thing. And they kind of do after the theme of the room. So it can be anything. And people just walk around and discover it's all bite-sized. It's like tapas, comedy tapas. You know, like you try different things. Things you might... like and things you might not like.
You've said alternative a couple of times.
Yeah.
Is that a word you're using to sort of encourage audience members to come out and sort of try, like you said, different varieties of comedy? Or is that the same kind of alternative that we would class comedy over here?
I think it's alternative in terms of Norwegian scene.
Right.
Because what we do is alternative. It's not traditional. Because, okay. It's basically an alternative to... the traditional format of festivals. So this year we tried to put in some solo shows, but it's still like at a very low cost because we put on comics that people haven't heard of, but we think is something they should see. So like I said, we try to encourage people to come out and see something they haven't seen before.
So for someone who's not been to a festival before, they would, as a performer, you would be in a room, sort of in a brewery, you said, and you'd be doing like sort of 10-minute spots,
mm-hmm.
like once a day for the whole run, or how would that?
No, it's normally it depends on what kind of comic, because it's not only stand-up comics; it can be, and like I said, musicians and whatnot. So, as a regular stand-up comic, we have had people do like 5 to 6 spots throughout the night, because it starts at 7 and it runs till 1 o'clock. Mm. And if there are 14 rooms in that venue, you can actually do quite a lot of spots, but in different rooms. And people, if they like you one time, they can go and see you again another time and find you at a different room. And if you don't, if they don't like you, they can find somebody else.
And in terms of, if you're doing a solo show over here, if you do it on the Free Fringe, for example, you have the bucket thing at the end. If you're doing a paid ticketed thing, obviously you get paid up front. Is it a case of you just have a flat fee for performers then, for the different rooms?
Yes, we do a flat fee. For the bucket thing, it's a very UK thing. That doesn't exist in Norway. Okay. Like, you would never, like, Norwegian comics would never, I wouldn't say never, but it's very, very unusual. I've yet to experience comics saying at French festival, where they say it cost you nothing to be here, but it cost us a fortune to be here, so please. They would never ask for that, because it's a different culture. It's a different type of scene. It's a different country, basically, and it's developing rapidly, but it's not like here.
And you're all kind of networked with each other in terms of sharing information about acts and shows. How official is the link between all your festivals? Because I know when I went to Brighton, they were telling me about World Fringe Alliance, which is a thing they've sort of set up. I mean, are you guys under a certain banner, or is it kind of just a we're all friends?
I only met these two as I sat down, so our links are very, very new. but hopefully we can develop.
Sam's not part of the gang yet.
I'm not part of the gang. I've just gegged in.
So we'd set up. So we've worked with Zulu for 5 years, 6 years, something like that. And so we've set up this thing called the European Comedy Festival Network, which so far is us three and Lund Comedy Festival in Sweden. How formal is it? It's just four people often sitting in a room chatting about ideas. So it's not formal at all. We are in the process of trying to get some money to do some projects between us, which essentially is around exchanging comedians and developing the festivals. So at the moment, it's a very small thing. There's only the four festivals involved, but if we get some money, then hopefully it can grow and develop, and other people can kind of join the gang, even Sam.
Well, thank you.
But I think, so it's nothing formal at all, it's just, and we thought we should call ourselves something, and we called ourselves the European Comedy Festival Network, but we'll, you know, it's early days, but we'll see how it goes. But I think we're all interested in that exchange of comedians, and certainly from our experience with the shows we've taken to Europe, there's a huge appetite, as really you two have been talking about, in Europe. And there's, you know, bigger examples of this, like Eddie Izzard, for example, is probably the biggest, who's done however many international shows and been really successful. So on the sort of, Mick Perrin would talk a lot about this in terms of the big comedians touring internationally. There's a huge market for that. I also think, from our experience, there's an opportunity for smaller acts. You're not going to make a lot of money out of it, but it's kind of, like you said, Sam, what I've found with UK-based comedians is the excitement in Denmark, Norway and Sweden is enormous, you know, and there's a huge appetite amongst people to go and see stand-up, particularly UK English-speaking stand-up. And it's really exciting, you know. I mean, we went to Comedy Box, where are we, last year, and it's really exciting, you know. It's a great, it feels, I'm not old enough to remember punk really, but it feels punky, it feels anarchic, it feels exciting, and that's great, you know. And it's not just touring around the UK circuit. Suddenly you find that there's this other market that you can probably exploit, I suppose, potentially.
And I also think with our exchange and the network, we also exchange knowledge and expertise and all that kind of things. And what is interesting is that both for Norway and Denmark, and I also think for Sweden, that the business is fairly new. So you said from the 90s?
Yeah.
And I think for Denmark it's the 80s. So compared to Dave Lester Comedy Festival and the British comedy scene, it's very different and we can learn a lot. But what you just mentioned, you learn from us as well, which is, it's very, it's very given. Also, and we learn from each other, because still there's only one really like comedy. There's also another comedy festival in Denmark, but that's totally international with big names, like, and it's very in that sense with agents. And the Zulu Comedy Festival is more about, as I told earlier, of like opening the eyes for the comedy, basically, and therefore it's very. We're very alone in a way. It's not that developed in Denmark, so we don't have a lot of colleagues or partners to share these experiences with and developed, and therefore we find very much guidance in working together internationally with festivals that has the same objectives and profiles and passion as we do.
It's the same in Norway. That's why we have... it's nice to have a colleague to talk to and discuss different and raise different issues or just play ball with. And it's the same with Denmark as in Norway. Norway have very large festivals, very commercial with the big names. But we're not. That's not where we what we are doing. We are developing an art form or an art festival within comedy. So it's smaller, but... not better or worse, it's just different.
And in many ways, would your profile not be as much of a factor then? Because like you said, if you're famous over here, people might not know who you are over there. So when applying or when trying to come over there, I mean, how much do you take on board someone's... Or would they just be going to the bigger festivals?
I do, personally, I scout. For all the comics that come over, because it's not about them being a good comic, but it's also do they fit, do the Norwegian understand the reference, their Norwegian audience, will they get the reference, will they get understand a thick accent, it's all these things that we need to consider as well. So it's not only that they understand English, but it's also do they take the references. So a lot, I get a lot of, it's interesting because I get a lot of emails from comics, from UK comics saying, hey, I had some fellow comics being at your club gig or at your show, I would really like to come over. And they send me an email full of quotes. What's it called? Is it where they...
Lies.
Yeah, so let's, for example, a comic say, like, been touring with that and that comic. That doesn't say anything to a Norwegian audience member. That doesn't say anything about that specific comic, who that comic is, what type of style they do, or anything. So that's why I'm very peculiar about scouting for comics.
So you're more likely to want just a video and like how long they've been going for rather than lies.
Yeah, I try to do research with videos, but I also travel a lot. So this, like Dave's Leicester Comedy Festival, it's a great place for me to scout because there's so much going on at the same time. I can see several shows a day. Mm. And also get the feeling, the vibe of, because a YouTube clip is just so many minutes. You don't really get it, but you sort of get a sense of who that is. But it's, I think I'm just a control freak.
But I think what we have learned over the past years is also concepts work very well. We actually borrowed a couple of Dave Leicester Comedy Festival's concept, like Comedy in the Dark. And Hotel de Comedy, because it's and then you can put international comedians in the concept because the concept sells itself. Because you can't take, it's the same in Denmark, you can't take like the text from a program where here a lot of the text, if it's just like a one man show or something like that, it's just reviews and quotes from different like media magazines of persons. That would never sell in Denmark because they have no reference to it. Therefore, it's much easier to say, okay, so it's Comedy in the Dark, and the concept is that it's stand-up in total darkness. And then it doesn't matter for the audience who is performing because they're buying the concept. And then it's easier sometimes to then put international or English or British comedians in a concept show. And that's where we find a lot of inspiration also here from the Dave Leicester Comedy Festival. It's also looking not only for, not scouting only for comedians, but also concepts.
Okay. And you guys run those concept shows, because I know you run The Fridge, as in you do the bookings.
We don't run The Fridge. We do, no, we produce shows like Comedy in the Dark, Hotel to Comedy. This year we've done quite a lot more of those types of things. Mm. But no, The Fridge is independent of us.
Okay.
But we just like it a lot.
So if you were a performer taking part in, say, Dave's Comedy Festival and they wanted to get you guys to come down to scout for them, what's the best way of getting people to come and see the show who might want to have you at their new festival?
I don't understand the question.
So say there's a performer in here who is taking part in the Leicester Comedy Festival that might want to come to your festival. What's the best way of trying to attract you to come and watch that show?
I actually gotten emails from a comic saying, hey, I heard that you're coming. Do you want to come and see my show? It's the same for London or for Fringe. I had that several times before. And it's also great. Yeah, so it's easy as that, really.
That.
Yeah, but also, if I don't know a comic, I also ask around for the comics that has been in Norway, that knows the Norwegian scene. And that's a very good reference as well, because they're colleagues. They would say, well, this might work for this scene or this gig or whatever. So it's sort of like a pinpoint, something to hope.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hold on to, basically.
Yeah, it's similar for the Zulu Comedy Festival and us. It's just writing an email if you know that we're here. Otherwise, we look through the program and go by recommendations from Jeff and his staff and other promoters that we know. In terms of, we have already listed up some criteria that we've learned over the years what would work. So. We know that shows with political references or very national references, like people and nationally known people, will not work for a Danish audience because simply we don't know them. So the whole thing just drops by that. We can't understand it. And also thick accents, as you mentioned before, is also difficult. So everyone in Denmark understands and also speaks English, but if you have a very, very strong accent, it's just too difficult, because with comedy and stand-up, you need to know every word. Like, if you just miss one word, it can actually do it for you. Like, you just zone out of the show. So, and then also topics that are translatable across countries, just as relationships, sex, like gender, stuff like that, everyday life issues, they work for Danish audience because they can relate, because our culture is still similar in that sense.
So other than the thick accent, or potentially a thick accent, English-speaking comics don't have anything to worry about in terms of applying for your festivals, because everyone can... There's a scene out there for English speaking, is what I'm asking.
Yes, at our festival, we do offer English-speaking comedy.
Our gigs are our regular gigs throughout the year is English, like English nights or Norwegian nights. So then English nights, people tend to be quite, they know that they're going to an English, so they kind of like, they prepare themselves, Norwegians, basically. But, I mean, it's still... Keep in mind that English is still just a second or third language for many Norwegians, and even though they understand the words, to understand the reference or to understand what the sense in a bigger sense can also basically lost in translation. I had several acts from the UK, from Newcastle and Liverpool and stuff, and I always tell them, I understand what you're saying, but just don't speak too fast, because it might go straight over the head for some Norwegian, but most of the time it's okay, as long as they're aware of it, you know. So, and speak slow, or more slow than I would with a UK club.
There was a situation a couple of years ago where we brought a quite famous Danish comedian who had a bit about that was very, very well known and popular, a joke in Danish about perfume commercials, and he translated it and it went well, and I think he's actually half English, so it wasn't a problem for him with the language. But he did a mistake that, so he has a reference to a male deodorant called Axe in Denmark, but it's called Lynch. It's a Lynch deodorant here, but he just translated it with the brand Axe. So that kind of, it wasn't very strong in a British, because you wouldn't know that unless you lived here, and you can see, okay, it's the same brand. Basically, it's just called different things.
Yeah.
Like they don't have sneakers, like the chocolate bar in the United States, it's called something else. Like, and so that is kind of just something that is so practical, but you wouldn't know of.
There should be an app.
Yeah.
Just yeah. Type in all your references and it just goes there. You go,
yeah.
See that.
Yeah.
There's an idea.
But the good thing, though, is that Norwegian culture is very close to the UK culture. Like we get like English programs and BBC and stuff. So Norwegians are grown up with the UK sort of news and language. But with the Americanization of them, of the language and TV shows and stuff. It's really, really weird because you can hear the laughter of if there's a Canadian or an American comic and a UK comic, the audience laugh at different things, and you can sort of point out who has followed the American stream and the British. That's also something we talk to some of the comics abroad when they're over, just for them to be aware that the audience might be a little bit split and words and terms they use and. Yeah.
Are there any common sort of, I wouldn't say mistakes, but things that comedians might do that you are aware of in the UK that you can talk about?
In terms of
maybe material, or in terms of promoting a show, or.
I think it comes back to that thing I talked about at the start. I relaunched the Liverpool Comedy Festival 2 years ago. So although it began in 2002. Kind of starting again 2 years ago for all intents and purposes. So we're just trying to, like I said before, just get that festival audience where people are willing to go and see a show with a theme or a show about a subject. We centrally programmed a lot of the shows the first year because I was aware that we needed this festival feel, and a lot of the shows were well attended, some of them weren't, and a lot of them were in smaller rooms. So I think that's something that as a festival, hopefully we can grow that audience where we can open it up to more of the more inventive kind of ideas and the more interesting topics. Because I think as a festival goer as well, I want to see, when I go to a festival, I want to see stuff that's I'm not going to see anywhere else. And whether that is a one-man show that they did in Edinburgh, they did in Leicester, and they did in Scandinavia, or whether it's something completely curated, but something that you're not going to see in a club, you know, something that's a bit different. So watch this space is kind of the subtext of what I'm saying for the Liverpool Comedy Festival.
In terms of your individual festivals, obviously you have a pitch for people who might come and watch something at your festival on your websites and stuff. If you were to pick out what's unique about your festival from a performer's point of view, if you were to pitch it at a performer, how would you describe what you're looking for, or I mean, yeah, obviously a unique show and stuff, but what would be the pulling factor to come to, for example, Liverpool?
I would say at the moment, a lot of the things I say to comedians is are you going to draw an audience? That's shifting a little bit as we, when we relaunched 2 years ago, it was bringing the comedy clubs on side with the idea of the festival, because a lot of the comedy clubs, I think, perhaps saw it as competition rather than something that would work as an umbrella that would push their brands as well. And I think we managed to do that quite successfully in the last 2 years, which is really, really positive. So that will change as the clubs and as the other promoters start to promote stuff. We can then pull away from programming so many of the shows and promote stuff that's a little bit more different. But previously it's been very much, are you going to bring an audience? Because I don't want comedians driving from 2 hours away or even an hour away to get to a room where there's going to be two people in, or there's going to be, you know, God forsake, nobody there for the show. Because that doesn't look good on the festival. It's a terrible experience for the comedian. And if one person does turn up, you know, 10 minutes after they're supposed to start, when you're already packing down, oh no, sorry, it's been cancelled. It's just like, it's such a bad experience for everyone, and it doesn't look good. It's not positive for anyone involved. So I think making sure you can get an audience, even if it is 15 people in a 20-seater room, that's the kind of overriding question that we ask at the moment.
And how, I mean, obviously you're supporting comedians by helping them advertise and stuff. How are comedians who are getting in the audiences in that area doing that?
I think we've got various acts that have built up audiences over the last couple of years, albeit quite gradually. And hopefully that's something they can continue to push and grow as a Liverpool Comedy Festival act that has an audience that comes and see them every year. Another challenge that we face is that although we're centrally funded by the Liverpool City Council, which is obviously fantastic, it's against the law in the Liverpool area to flyer on the street. So it's a challenge getting, I don't know what it's like in Leicester, it's whether the same, that's the yeah. same here. Yeah. So I can't really complain about that too much then, can I? but that is a challenge in terms of visibility and awareness, and even with some of the smaller venues where the free fringe model as well, just getting people in last minute, just the act of giving out a flyer, you can get quite a hefty fine. So we're trying to get the council to relax those laws just for the 2 week period and maybe give us safe zones or whatever it is. But I suppose to answer your question, we offer that support and that promotion that we do with the festival as a whole, and we try to, you know, keep in touch with all the acts. We're able to do that because we're nowhere near as big as Leicester in terms of programming, and just say if you've got a specific press stunt you want to do or a specific market you want us to push you to, time permitting, we can try and do that on some occasions.
And Leicester?
What's the message that we give to comedians?
What's the sort of pitch that you would want to try and put in to get comedians to come to your festival?
I don't know the answer to that, but I suppose I should. What people tell us is that you'll probably get an audience, which is good, and you'll probably get a good audience, and you probably won't lose as much money as you do in Edinburgh. which are both kind of slightly weird selling points, I suppose. But and of course we can guarantee a series on Dave, since they've sponsored us. So I think it's people tell us that it's really manageable, it's really supportive. The promoters, the vast majority of our promoters are very supportive and will help, and there's a comedy savvy audience here. And it kind of works, really. Our average capacity is something like 70% or something across the festival, which with 780 shows is not bad, I think, in terms of audience attendance. The terrifying thing for a lot of our promoters is that sales are really last minute. So door sales are huge here. So we spend most of the last 2 weeks of the festival either talking to acts or promoters going, yeah, I know you sold 4 tickets, but don't worry, probably a lot more will turn up on the night. And that seems, of course, some shows die on their ass and nobody goes, but most of the time people get reasonable audiences, and they're a comedy savvy audience, and they are normal people. They're not just your mates or the industry or the other people working at the venue, which can happen elsewhere. But so that's our not very coherent sales pitch to comedians. But also don't forget that most of the time if we're selling the festival to anybody, we kind of sell it to promoters. That's what we want. We want more people to come and take over spaces like this room that we're in today and other venues. So we spend quite a lot of time talking to other promoters and producers who will take on spaces, because then they will program to acts, they will do that, they will have that conversation.
Yeah, it's similar with the Zulu Comedy Festival, that we do not book the whole program or create the whole program. We are very interested in also discovering new venues or possible venues, and they then book the program. But I think what, as I said earlier, is important for our festival is that it's kind of it represents everything that makes you laugh, and therefore it's also a playground for comedians to try new material, experiment with the whole genre in a sense, in what it can do. So we have a lot of just regular stand-up comedians that have done traditional stand-up, and they try new formats at the festival. That's kind of our strong, like, that's what we can deliver that no one else can for the rest of the year at just normal comedy clubs. And we can also provide an audience, because it's gathered in, or it's under the brand of the Zulu Comedy Festival, so it doesn't stand alone. So if, let's say, you just put up a show that's very experimental in a way, or it's a totally new format, the Danish audience are very conservative in a way that would never sell tickets unless you were a name, like there was some kind of a famous name taking part of the show. But with the festival, we try to support these kind of experimental formats and concepts, and so they can get an audience. And in that sense, we are also trying to develop an audience. So I guess that's the most interesting thing in terms of performers and comedians. But we do offer in the program, we do offer very like very established and famous comedians to like very weird concept experimental things. Like we have a wide variety of shows. So, but that's what we as a festival office try to encourage, is try new stuff and don't be afraid.
So we produce everything ourselves for all our shows and all the rooms that we do. So we provide with an audience and the rooms. So we challenge the audience to come and see different things, but we also challenge the comedians to step out of their box and do other stuff. So our festival is not for all comedians. So if you want to come to the festival and experiment and do something different and be a part of something different, then that's great. But if you want the traditional scene or the traditional festival concept, then we are probably not the right. So I don't really... So we don't actively encourage comics to just contact us unless they are aware of the concept. They have to understand the concept and want to be a part of it. And that's a great thing, because all the comics who come to our festival, they are a part of the festival. And it's great to be backstage, because there's almost nobody there, because they're all seeing each other's show and going into the different rooms. And I think that's great.
It's really cool. And what would you say is the most underused facility that you offer at each of your festivals from a performance standpoint?
I would say that our ability to... we've got great links with the local press, and we have the sponsorship deal with... they were called Juice, they're now called Capital, which is obviously they're a national radio station, but they've got specific local versions. And I think I think we made it clear to the act that we can use this in a positive way. We were getting a press story every day, and we were getting loads of radio coverage. And I think we tried to push to the act, if you come up with an interesting concept or an interesting idea, they will run with this, because they're desperate for any content that's a little bit different. Online content's really big, especially with a lot of press sort of sales going down and online content being a lot much higher views. Any kind of viral video or something, a video that's got the potential to go viral, or any content that will push their show. I think it's just a case of the act going that extra mile and just putting a bit more into it and pushing it a bit more and being a bit more creative. Some acts did that, some didn't, and that might be to a variety of reasons, but that's something that we'll make sure, perhaps from our point of view, we didn't push as much. I mean, I do like to think we did, but perhaps we need to make that message a bit clearer next time.
I think for us it's probably a similar sort of thing, really, because we don't book centrally, and because our promoters are and producers are sort of in between us and most of the acts. Quite often acts won't contact us at all, which I always find quite surprising. So for example, we can give advice about how to flyer in Leicester without getting a fine. We can advise about how to advertise. We've got social media feeds. We've got all this sort of stuff, hotel deals with train companies, that kind of thing, which I'm sure a lot of the acts don't know anything about, because they don't get in touch with us. So I appreciate it's time-consuming, because you have to contact your promoter direct, and then you also have to contact the festival office. But get in touch with us, and we'll support all the shows as much as we possibly can, but only when we've got the information. So that's probably the biggest message, is to speak to us as well as to your venue promoter, producer.
If you're a performer who's a bit nervous about maybe asking about train deals or something like that, how would you just encourage, like, what are you doing to encourage them to sort of, because obviously as performers we're a bit like, you know, we'll just do it all because, you know, we're sorting out our own show and stuff, so maybe we don't want to sort of beg for a discount on a train or something, which you might not even have, because we might be barking up the wrong tree. So how are you sort of encouraging them to come forward and talk?
Well, we do contact everybody. We do send emails, you know, about media contacts and press opportunities and all those sorts of things. I don't know if there's any... you've done a show, Simon, in the festival, so if there's any feedback about how we can make that better... I mean, the slight problem is most of our contact with the performers is via email, because there's 550 of them or something this year. Some of them don't read the emails and don't get into contact with us. I think we're reasonably approachable. I don't know, you tell us. Are there such things as shy comedians?
I think a lot of comedians, let's be honest, yeah, a lot of comedians are very disorganised and incredibly hard.
That's what
to
I was trying
with.
Not to say.
Yeah, no, but not, you know, that's just understanding that, and you know, with my comedian's hat on, probably I'm more organised than a lot of my peers just because my background, doing different jobs or whatever. But I think a lot of emails just don't get read, or information just gets absorbed and then dismissed, or if an act's got an agent who's dealing, they feel that none of that should be their concern and that the agent should babysit them to a degree. These aren't faults, but they're massive faults, aren't they? They're huge, massive faults. But it's not really a criticism as such, it's just kind of, that's the reality really. And I think there's only so much you can do, but yeah. To let them know about these discounts and things like that.
And the used features.
Yeah, what we just talked about is very similar to the Danish comedians, and what we challenge is that comedians are not well organized, and I barely think they sometimes read emails if they're too long. But that's also the charm about it, and that's what you got to work with. But I think in that sense... I think in our festival, actually most comedians are very good at the whole issue that you talk about in terms of branding and promoting shows. I think what we are asking for comedians is approaching and contacting us earlier in the stage before the deadline and everything, kind of using us as a consultants on developing their shows, because we do not book the program, but we go around to different venues, and a lot of venues are not specialized in comedy, so they ask us for guidance and say, oh, so what's on, what could be interesting in terms of our profile and our audiences. And there we need that information from the comedians on an early stage. So if what we're trying to do now is that each year our festival is placed in the end of August, in the beginning of September. At the end of the festival, we try to create a dialogue with the comedians already asking at that point, could you be interested in taking part of the festival next year? So we kind of know, and they kind of start having the idea, okay, so what can I do for the festival next year? So we know when we go around just after New Year's each year, with the venues, that we actually have kind of a catalogue in our heads about what's the opportunities. Okay, so this comedian is doing kind of this show, could that be interesting? And we kind of develop from there. And I think we're trying to get the comedians, all the CI comedians, to call us up and write an email and say, I have this idea, it's not done yet, it's not a specific show that I'm trying to sell you guys, it's just an idea, and we kind of want to support that, because we do not buy shows or book shows, only a small amount, but we can take that idea or even that show to venues, and they rely on us for this guidance in a way. So yeah.
Like I said before, we produce the whole festival ourselves because it's a concept festival. Mm. We are relying on having a direct dialogue with all our acts, because we experience if we go through an agency, they might not get to explain the comic, what the concept is. And we had acts coming to our comedy festival and sort of like, oh, I'm not doing a solo show? So we learned that we have to have a direct dialogue, because it goes both ways. If we do our job as a promoter and a festival organizer, we make sure that everything is there that's an audience, but they also have to give us the right information. Mm-hmm. And I know that my reputation in the Norwegian scene is that I'm the chick with all the emails. because I write everything over email, but it's how can I promote your show if you are not able to give me the information that I need to give to the audience or to the public? So, like I said, it goes both ways, and we try our best to always have a constant dialogue between the because the act has no act if they don't have a stage, and we don't have a stage if we don't have an act to be on stage, but we don't have anything if there's no audience. So we try to keep it as a, this is a team, sort of like a team
work.
Yeah, teamwork, basically.
Okay. I've got three questions left to ask, but does anyone from the floor have anything they want to ask us? Okay, well, very quiet. Okay, in terms of, in the UK scene especially, a lot of comedians treat Edinburgh like sort of the year mark, if that makes sense, especially for solo shows. Where would you say your festival slots into, like, sort of the year for either performers or in your own mind with other festivals?
Well, Liverpool runs the end of September, start of October, so it's kind of a tricky time. We used to run, before I started on it, we used to run in May and also July for a time, which was nice for the pre-Edinburgh previews. So that's a nice way of, well, it enables you to get acts that perhaps would be above the venue that you're putting them in because they are trying out a show, essentially, so you can, it can be beneficial to both parties. So now we're in end of September, start of October. So in terms of the comedy calendar, or the UK comedy calendar, it's kind of an awkward time, a little bit, because we get a lot of acts who've done Edinburgh and then want to do their show again, and they book into our festival when they're very excited about their Edinburgh run. And then they do their Edinburgh run, and their dreams are shattered. And then they have to dust out the box and get all the notes together and do the show again in our festival. That's me putting a very comic exaggeration on it, obviously. But we do have, obviously, people who've done a show in Edinburgh, and they're delighted to bring it out and do it again. It fits in with a lot of the touring schedule. There's quite a lot of touring acts on a bigger level at that time. From our audience point of view, it fits in perfectly with the start of the university term. Liverpool's got three universities and a huge student population, and that's something that we're tapping into with partnerships with universities. So in terms of audience, it works for us better than the summer did, but in terms of acts, it just means we have to be a little bit less Edinburgh focused or less pre-Edinburgh focused, unless people are really, really starting the next year of Edinburgh preparations very early. But you know, we know, we've just talked about comedians, and I think a show that early in its creation would be a sight to see. I'll leave it at that.
When we started the festival, we were pretty much like you in Liverpool, really, in the sense that we would book, we would go to Edinburgh in August and book the shows for the following February. Leicester's always been in February, but now what happens is an awful lot of acts come and try stuff out, either work in progress shows or just not even that, really, just ideas that then, because I think Edinburgh deadline is April, isn't it? April, May time, end of April, something like that. So people come and try stuff out here to then take to Edinburgh. So that works really well for us. That's great because audiences come to see shows before they're fully formed, but also the industry come too in order to pick up stuff that they may or may not want to take to Edinburgh and then tour after that. So that's that happens a lot now. So that happens. For us, the biggest problem is Christmas, because we launch in November. There's a bit of excitement around that, and then in December it goes pretty quiet because everybody's focused on Christmas, and then in January people start to pay attention again. But yes, I hope that answers your question.
So we are placed in the end of August and beginning of September. It's 11 days. And because it's mainly Danish speaking comedy, we are not that influenced by the Edinburgh Fringe. But it has consequences for our international English speaking comedy, because a lot of people will be at Fringe and will just arrive from the Edinburgh Fringe and then to the Sulu Comedy Festival and be very tired. But that's just a smaller part of it. In terms of the overall year, we would like to have more kind of test shows and maybe premieres or pre-premieres of larger touring shows, but they start by the end of September mostly, or in the beginning of October. So in that sense, it's difficult because we're too early. It's great in terms of season and weather, but if it's too a great summer, it's difficult to sell tickets because no one wants to sit inside and see stand up. But overall, I think it's we talked about moving it for winter time, like here in Leicester. But in terms of our sponsorship with the broadcasting channel Sulu, it kind of, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be sorted before that can happen. But I think we're happy about the place in year. Also, all the TV shows and all that has not yet started. So we also, I think you do not have any TV campaign or anything with Dave. It's different in Denmark. We do actually have a TV campaign for the festival also, and we are also on TV. So we are also aired on TV with various stand-up shows. So in that sense, it's fine because it has to match the broadcasting, the channel's season in that sense, and there's room for the festival. So we get into more channels
For us, it's more about not crashing with other comedy festivals that we feel it's valuable for us to either scout or go and meet our fellow colleagues or be a part of a festival. So we're at the end of May, right before summer holidays in Norway. So it's also easy. I find it easier to get comics, both Norwegian and international, because it's right before summer, before they take holiday. So it's like a fun thing to do before, like, the downtime of shows.
Cool. And if there's one thing that you're working on in the short to medium term for your festival's development that you think would be appealing to future performers, what would that be?
That's a good question. I think that development of more curated ideas, and I think once we get a couple of those off the ground this year, which we're quite excited about, but still very much the ideas are in their infancy, I think once we can get a few more of those under our belt, it will enable us to open channels with comedians and have a two-way conversation really about their ideas, and hopefully people will start approaching us about an idea they've got that's a bit more off the wall and a bit more, you know, unusual, that we can support them either financially or with space or whatever they need. I think that's something that we would like to be able to offer soon.
I don't know whether I'm stealing the thunder of you two, but for us, it's probably this European Comedy Festivals Network has got an application in at the moment with the European Union for some money to do a project across Europe with comedians. We'll find out in, I think it's about 4 weeks' time, we should know. So if we get that, that's probably one of the things that's really exciting. But I won't talk more about it, because if we don't get it, it won't happen. it'll be a two-year programme, and it'll involve our festivals, Lund Comedy Festival in Sweden, maybe Liverpool, and some others. So that's really exciting. In terms of the actual Dave Lester Comedy Festival, I don't know. We've never really had much of a plan for it. It's kind of an accident that it's lasted so long, really. So it's I don't know. I don't know what our plans are for next year, but then also I'm mid-festival, so I'm a bit brain dead at the minute.
Sorry, could you just rephrase the question?
The question was if there's one thing that you're like working on for the development of your festival in the short to medium term that would appeal to performers, what would you
do? That would appeal to performers?
To performers, yeah.
Yeah, so partly the same as Jeff with the project that we're working on. Also, we are looking into the opportunities to. So, our festival is both actually a grand TV gala show. So it's in some way similar to your. You have like a gala show, correct? What is it called?
The preview show.
The preview show. So we do. It's not a preview show. It's more just a big gala award show. But it only has two awards for comedy, and it's also broadcasted on TV. And we are looking into the opportunities to kind of expand the award. So we all, because that's just like the greatest comedian, and then an upcoming the new talent. That's the two awards. So, but we are looking into opportunities so we can get more awards. Also inspired from the Dave Lester Comedy Festival, with also festival awards. So maybe a festival show, or maybe more technical stuff in terms of stand up and that business. We're just looking into opportunities in a way that, in that sense, we could maybe both do something for the industry as performers and comedians, and maybe that can help. Maybe kind of that they can use that in kind of the bios or the program text that you use, because we do not have a lot of reviews or like a culture of you have the chortle, and we do not have any equivalent to that in Denmark. So maybe that kind of award or whatever it could bring, or it will be in the future, that could bring something to the performer that they can use as a promoting tool, and also it can maybe open up the stand-up industry for the Danish people, in the sense of understanding what it is, because it's fairly new, so that they get an understanding of it's not just a man just standing on a stage just saying jokes. There's a lot of work before it, and it is like you're a hardworking performer, and it is an art form, because we have the same as Chi mentioned, that we have difficulties getting like the public to understand it as an art form and an actual work, that it's not as easy as it looks when you're just standing on stage. There's a lot of work behind it.
Answer well on that. I'm very interested in the subject of developing comedy as an art form, not only for the public view or the industry point of view, but also for the Arts Council, because normally when you apply for fundings, they have certain genre that you apply to, if it's theater or dance, but they don't have anything equivalent to comedy. It's not an own genre. So in terms of, for our sake, in Norway, I'm trying to sort of find a way how to include and work with and open up a dialogue with the Arts Council, because by the end of the day, they are sort of like they are the ones people look at when they talk about art form. Because I do think, I strongly believe that we should recognize comedians, stand-up comedians, sketch comedy, any types of comedian as performing artists. And that's something we try to do through our festival. Like our festival is sort of like a channel for that. And we try to also take it, try to develop that, but on a political, I don't have the right word for it, platform?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's really important for us, because it's, by the end of the day, it's kind of our job, and not only the performers, but we are the one who, as a booker or a producer or a festival, it's our job to make sure that the performing artists, the comedians, are taken care of both on stage but also off stage, So I think it's our turn to, or it's our job to sort of challenge the art form. And that's, I feel that development, that kind of development that we're trying to head towards, it's, it kind of develops everything that we do. It touches everything else that we do.
Last chance. Anyone going to come back to us?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming down. Thank you so much for listening. I loved hearing more about what goes on behind the scenes at the Leicester Comedy Festival and learning more about how the shows can go on to other exciting and fun things from the festival and how that works. I think it's very easy for us to just go to festivals with a show and that's it. Whereas if you have a plan in place or you have certain things that you want out of it that maybe can take your show further and see it go further and see it go to other exciting places, then it's great to know that there are facilities in place at certain festivals and there are people who work at the festival who want acts to be aspirational and to take their show on tours or to new places or go further in their careers. So if you're excited about this and you've had a great time, feel free to get in touch with any of the festival founders, give them a tweet, say you heard about them through the podcast, ask them any questions you want to ask. They're absolutely lovely, totally approachable, and I've found them nothing but supportive, so I would highly recommend working with all of them. That also includes the Liverpool Comedy Festival, who are, as far as I am aware, not part of that network at the moment, but they also are absolutely lovely and 100% responsive and really want their festival to go far as well. So if you've enjoyed this episode, please do share it with someone who might be looking at taking part in the Leicester Comedy Festival next year. I think it's just a great bit of background information and just a bit of additional help for people who want to do more with that festival and not just do their show and go home. If you'd like more information about when our next live pods are going to be, please join the Facebook group. It's called Ask the Industry Podcast and it's on Facebook, obviously. That's the place where I advertise it, first of all, then out to the mailing list, which you can join on my website, and then everyone else on this will find out about it through me plugging it in episodes. If you'd like to take part in shaping those and suggesting people from panels and for future guests and ask questions to future guests, I highly recommend you join the Ask the Industry Podcast group, because that's the place where I get most of those questions and crowdsource from you guys who you'd like to hear from. Please do join that community. If you're enjoying this podcast, please do think about giving me a donation. It really helps the podcast continue. And you can do that as a one-off thing on PayPal from my website on simonkane.co.uk, or you can become a Patreon from $1 an episode. That's 80p. It's hardly anything. If you think this episode is worth 80p and you're enjoying this podcast and you want to see it flourish, please do consider becoming a Patreon. It really helps. There's a link in the show notes. There's a link on my website. It's Patreon, patreon.com/AskTheIndustryPodcast. Honestly, all support is ridiculously helpful though, so if you can't afford it, please don't donate if you can't afford it, but just share the pod with someone and just pass around the message of the project, so that'd be great. In the meantime, thank you very much for sharing, thank you very much for listening, thank you very much for donating, and just generally being a bloody awesome audience. I will see you all in about 10 days time. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.